On my travels or travails here and there, I've been speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, which affords us an opportunity to consider the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam specifically by focusing on the qualities of Krishna as Vishnu, who is the, who is he, what is he, that is described in Vishnu Sahasranama. But before I speak on that, I'd just like to say a few words about why I'm here. One reason, major reason, is because about 3 years ago, in Prague, in the Czech Republic, I had a program there, and Vedanta Krit Prabhu was there, and he invited me to come here. So I just met him after Mongol Arati. He's off on some business today, whatever. But I'm also very interested in these farm communities, and I presume that every follower of Srila Prabhupada has to be, because it's such a major part of Srila Prabhupada's mission. 50%, he said. 50% of my work is to be done. Varnashram. And if you consider what Prabhupada did, which was inconceivable and impossible for anyone except Srila Prabhupada, it seems, what a unprecedented effect Srila Prabhupada had on the spiritual life of the world. And he said that 50% of my work is still to be done in establishing these communities. Then we have to be, if we're followers of Prabhupada, we have to take this very seriously. So, this is my first time coming here. It's 1400 acres of property is no small, it's not a little plot outside someone's house in which they grow a few vegetables. It's, especially in India, I mean, we just can't imagine such a huge plot of land. So it's very great potential. Apart from the odd hurricane, the climate must be excellent for growing, huh? You have a
9 months.
You have 3 months. It's so cold that you can't grow. You have it all the year round.
It's limited to 3 months. You can only do greens and beets and some other roofing.
Well, I mean, you can grow something. I mean, a lot of the places in the world, they have 6 months or less growing season.
Cows can also be pastured all year.
All the year round, yeah, and beautiful grass. This is New Talavan. You have tall trees with fruit?
We have fruit trees, but I don't think we have tall trees. Tall are a palm, right?
Tall means palm, yeah, but especially as described in Krishna book, how the cowherd boys, they wanted to eat the palm fruits. So that's, there are many kinds of palm. It's like a generic, to say palm tree, it's a genre, what do you call it? But the specific ones that is very common in India, they have fruit trees. And in Bengal, they also take the juice from that tree and you can drink it, and they make it into gur. Just like you have gur from sugar cane, from dates, and you can also make tal gur, palm candy, I guess you call it, raw sugar candy. Mm-hmm. It's very sweet, very intoxicating. the drink is... Oh! What's going on there? It's a call from Baltimore, Maryland. Well, maybe you could try for that, because the climate here seems to be similar to Bengal.
Yeah, except we do get some frost. In January, it wouldn't be uncommon.
freezing limits many of the crops. They won't grow. They'll just be killed. When I say many of the crops, I mean those that were growing in Bengal. It's not tropical then.
It's not tropical, it's just semi-tropical.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada came, he said the landscape did resemble West Bengal.
Mm-hmm.
But when we asked him to name it New Bengal or something like that, he chose New Taliban.
New Taliban, yeah. Cold in the winter is more like Vrindavan. Vrindavan's very cold. Doesn't go below freezing, but sometimes goes down almost that far. And you feel it more there too, because there's no heating. Generally people, they just tolerate.
Yeah.
They don't, and traditionally there was no fan in the summer either, only for the rich people would have someone fan them. Yeah, and the night, so that Nitai Pada Kamala Koti Chandra Shushitala, the moon is very cooling, so tend to appreciate the moon in the heat of the sunshine. So, my obeisance to all the devotees who are here and serving Srila Prabhupada's mission. There's a lot more to do, obviously. That our movement is still very much urban-based. But Srila Prabhupada, we tend to think of him and present him as a religious reformer or a religious pioneer. But he himself saw himself as more than simply a religious preacher, but he wanted to give a practical solutions to the problems of the world. The people are living horrible lives in the cities. It's horrible that in the city every time you breathe, which is all the time, you breathe poison. If you want to drink water which is not poisonous, especially in New Orleans, you have to buy it. But it's also poisonous, coming in the plastic bottle. And to get that plastic bottle means you have to desecrate Mother Earth to get that bottle. And the food you eat is poisonous. How horrible. It's unimaginable. The food which is supposed to nourish you, it poisons you. Horrible situation. And you have to lock your house. Now you may think, well, that's just an ordinary thing to do. But if you have to lock your house, it means you're not living in a civilized, you're living amongst savages. And we just consider, well, it's just completely normal. You have to do it in the city. And as the city is just full of people you can't trust, and they know that if they have an opportunity, they'll burgle your house. So it's a horrible situation. What to speak of the stress and the fact that the majority of people, if they have a job at all or any income, they're mostly doing some kind of job that they don't like to do, and they spend their whole life doing that. And what to speak of the degradation. The whole thing is just a disaster. So Srila Prabhupada saw that, and he wanted to establish a simple way of life in which people live simply and sanely, and of course with Krishna in the center, because there's not that much gain overall to be if you simply live simply without Krishna. It's simple living and high thinking, not just simple living. So Krishna in the center, that's the essence. But it's also very difficult to think of Krishna if you have to work among non-devotees, hard work, long hours, And you so many artificial necessities like this cell phone. Nowadays it's considered a necessity. But it's not. Believe it or not, people lived up until the last 20 years ago or so, or less than that, without cell phones. And there are some people in the world who still do it. I'm one of them. I never had a cell phone in my life. Can you imagine what an odd species? They might put me in the zoo with a cell phone. So artificial necessities. Until recently, people lived, and I traveled for years in the villages in Bangladesh before they got the blessing of electric current. They did have some, in many of the villages they had these hand pumping tube wells. So that was the sign of advancement was just coming. And in some, it's not uncommon that they had this corrugated iron sheet roofs, which was a step back from the thatch roof because it's much hotter and colder in the winter also. And when it rains, and it rains heavily in Bangladesh for 4 months a year, then you can't hear yourself talking to someone else inside the house because it makes so much noise on the corrugated iron. Yeah, it sounds like the bullets. Yeah, that's another thing, another advancement. You're telling me you have to pay the taxes for the buildings. Well, it's not only for the roads and the maintaining the utilities, it's also for, you've got to pay for bombs and bullets in Iraq, right? Oh, that's federal tax.
It's federal. We do pay the wages for all the administrators and police.
Yeah. So anyway, it is, I've personally lived in a situation for years in which there's no electricity, no phone. Well, electricity covers pretty much all of it, doesn't it? No doctors, no hospitals, no roads in many places. What you would call a road, that dirt tracks for walking. And people would, lots of rivers also. The river is a major means of communication. No doctors means mostly people knew how to keep themselves healthy. And something like bad stomach, you go and pick some herbs and take it. And if there's a snake bite, which is fairly common, they have to call a fakir. They, by magic and mantra, they cure it. I mean, it wouldn't pass a medical test, but whatever works, it works. I didn't see it, but heard of it, and there are many such things. One of our godbrothers told me he had jaundice, and a fakir came and put some, like a crown of twigs on his head, and it grew, and it fell down. When it grew more, it fell down under his shoulder. When it fell down, and it grew and grew, and it fell down, and when it fell down past his shoulders, he was cured. So, yeah. Still in Vrindavan, there's Shamsaki. That was the name of his father, but he's kept the same name because everyone knows it so well, who cures jaundice by puts you in a tub and pours water with mantra, and all the water becomes yellow and your body stops being yellow and it's finished. So people may not believe it, but such things are going on. The fatality rate would be higher, people dying from disease. That's also the birth fatality is quite high, and infant fatality is quite high compared to city rates, but of course people had a lot of children. And those that lived, they'd be stronger also. Whereas nowadays, a lot of the children, they live, but they're very sickly all their life. Anyway, simple living. Srila Prabhupada, he was obviously very, very keen on this. He wanted it very much, so. The brahmacharis and vanaprastas who are traveling and preaching can also think to, if they're young couples or middle-aged couples or whatever, who you find who are interested in Krishna consciousness, you might want to send them here. Send them to Prabhupada's farms. And show a simple, more natural, happy way of life. People can actually be happy. That's the whole aim, ultimately, what Srila Prabhupada came to this world for, and why we're so grateful to him, because he made us happy. Everyone wants to be happy. So we can be happy with Krishna, and even in this world, Krishna himself showed us how to live happily by protecting the cows, was the central part of Krishna. He was known as Gopala. Gopala, Govinda, Rama. Rama means here, Balaram. So, happy Krishna and happy devotees. Okay, so speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 163. So, made some progress here. Some start, but still, let's see, 836 to go after this one. No, 837. So, this name, I'll say it along with the next name. Name 163 is Niyama, and name 164 is Yama. So these two terms are well known from the, particularly from the Ashtanga Yoga system. In Ashtanga Yoga, eight limbed system of yoga, the first two are Yama and Niyama. Yama refers to general moral rules, you could say. And niyama means specific rules. As a personal name, niyama means the controller. So, rules are given. And rules are to control our life. There are certain things which everyone should do, basic rules. One should not steal, one should not lie, one should not cheat, one should not inflict harm on others, physical harm. These are basic rules which everyone is to follow. So, this is all part of dharma. We find that Bhagavad Gita is called Yoga Shastra. Arjuna was interested in dharma. Dharma, Arjuna's objection to fighting was on the grounds of dharma. But Krishna brought Arjuna to a higher level of yoga. So dharma, ultimately the dharma and yoga mean the same thing. But dharma, as generally understood, means rules for living in this world. And yoga means the ultimate purpose of for which one should live in this world and how one should get out of this world. So Arjuna's arguments for not fighting, they were on the basis of dharma. Social consciousness. And Krishna brought Arjuna to spiritual consciousness. But the basis of both of them are the same. And we shouldn't make too much distinction between yoga and dharma. The basis is the same. Sometimes dharma is translated as morality. But it is different to morality as is conceived of in the Western world, because, or in the modern sense, because morality is considered to be relative. And often it's considered to be user-defined, that you can have your own standard. Of course, many morals are reinforced by law. So if you have your own morality, that it's just like honor killings. It's inconceivable to the Western mind, but there has been in the Christian world also honor killings in the past. So that's outside the imagination of people in modern America, most people. But it is considered acceptable in some cultures. So it's very different morality, isn't it? And in Hindu culture, cow killing is considered something impossible, or at least used to be. Whereas in America, they just think you're stupid for not killing cows. Why? What's wrong with it? In fact, I remember seeing as a child an advertisement in the newspaper for a famous British charity called Oxfam. And they showed a photograph of a man starving to death in the drought and famine in Bihar. That was much publicized going on at that time. Though when I came to India later and asked about it, no one knew anything about it. They said there was a famine in Bihar, but later when I went to Bihar and asked them about it, no one remembered it, or there hadn't been. It was just something they made up, it seemed. So there was a photo of an old man who was very thin and standing next to a cow. And the old man looked very sickly. Of course, old men often do look very thin and sickly anyway. But their advertisement is that you should give money to our charity because we're not only feeding people, but we're educating them. And you see, I'm paraphrasing this. Here's this stupid man who's starving to death, and there's a cow there, and he won't even kill it and eat it, which any sane person would do. So it's a very different standard of morality. But the morality that is suggested, that is given here, the controller. Krishna is the controller. He rules. There are different ways of ruling or controlling. There is Shastra and Shastra. So Krishna is weapons and scriptural injunctions. And there also, Krishna has one more, which no one else has, which is the control over the whole material nature. So Krishna is the controller, and particularly, he gives the rules of dharma. He controls material nature. We get different bodies. How do we get different bodies? That is by karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papatye. According to our karma and under the supervision, under the control of the Supreme Lord and His appointed agents, we get different bodies. So He is the one who assigns and directs. He assigns different roles to different people. Just like that question came up a few days ago, that someone asked me about Srila Prabhupada calling Hitler a Shaktyavesh avatar. And an empowered incarnation. Empowered incarnation. So I replied that they probably misheard. Empowered, yes. Because everyone gets power from Krishna. So empowered, but not an incarnation. Maybe the opposite. He instead of coming down from the spiritual world, he came up from hell. So, but empowered, yes. In one sense, everyone is empowered. Even to fiddle around with your fingers on the floor there requires some power, right? Requires some energy to do anything, to be a mother, a father, a whatever. It requires whatever power we have comes from Krishna. But one who has particular power, we say empowered. So that may be Shaktyaveshavata, someone who comes down in this world to perform some specific function on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it may be someone appointed by Krishna via his representatives to mete out punishment to sinful persons. Now, we have to be very careful. We don't know. This would be so much, if we say this, that Hitler was put in that situation or given power by the material energy working under the supervision of Krishna to give punishment to sinful people, that will not be at all appreciated. But actually it's a fact. Not that Hitler wasn't sinful. But we also understand that those who he tortured and killed, they were also sinful. So these big wars between various parties of demons, that's all. Srila Prabhupada gave an example. He said that when I was at school, if two boys were naughty and fighting with each other, then the teacher would tell them to stand at the front of the class, hold each other's ears and pull hard. So as a punishment, they would hurt each other in front of everyone. And that was so Srila Prabhupada said that these wars, it's like, it's Krishna's arrangement. It's just like that, that two parties of demons, they pit themselves against each other and they kill each other. So, Krishna gives everyone the specific situation. Everyone is born in a specific situation exactly according to their karmic reactions and their desires. Their desire is also there. It's also a factor. Just like one of the two, well, how many contenders are there for the presidential election? Three coming up? Two.
Two.
Ron Paul's.
Oh, that's vice president.
Oh.
Mitt Romney. Ryan and Mitt Romney.
So there are how many?
Well,
two. There's two. Two main ones.
Each has a vice president.
I see. Okay. All right. Forgive my ignorance of the American governmental system. So, one will lose. Oh, this is another thing I shouldn't say. But anyway. Well, in America you're allowed to criticize politicians. So far. So, one of them will lose. And there are also contests to be governors, and I see everywhere they vote to be the sheriff. You vote for the sheriff, Osmond?
Yeah.
And for the school or something. For all kinds of things. You vote for it's like politics at every level, like to be the janitor or something. Vote so and so to be. And nowadays, it's some few jobs. Maybe they will have a vote for the janitor. So one wants to be the president, and whoever fails He still has the desire to be, but it wasn't fulfilled. So he may be fulfilled in the next life, but according to his karma. So if he has the karma to be a dog, he could be the biggest dog in a pack of dogs. So the desire is fulfilled to be the chief, to be the one that others look up to and fear, but not in exactly the way he had wished, but still the desire is fulfilled. So of course, so if we consider that every living being gets their particular situation exactly according to what they have done and what they desire to do, it's extremely complex. Krishna arranges it all. And he puts people together in such a way that they can play off their karma against each other, just like it may be that two people get married and actually they're enemies from a previous life. Or it may be that you, as in the case of Chitraketu and his son, that was suggested, that your enemy may be born as your child. And then the child dies according to their karma and gives you great grief. So it's extremely complex. But Krishna oversees it all. That requires more intelligence than any supercomputer could be programmed for. Not only biologically putting them all together, but psychologically and karmologically, if there's any such word. Well, I just invented it. So from the sun and the moon and the Brahma and all the higher planets up to the yes, Twindra Gopamatavindra Maho Swakarama Bandhana Rupa Phala Bhajana Matanoti Karmana Nirdahati Kintu Chapati Bhaja Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person who we worship, he meets out the karmic fruits from Indra down to the germ and even above Indra. So if we consider the implications of that, it's mind-boggling. So that's what should happen when we consider the qualities of Krishna. The mind should boggle. Oh, how great is Krishna? And that is bhakti, to consider the greatness of Krishna. That's a beginning. To appreciatively consider the greatness of Krishna. Then the name Yama is very similar. It means the ruler, the regulator, the administrator, the controller. This name is, of course, well known with Yamaraj. He's particularly the controller of the sinful living beings, those who never chant Hare Krishna, or those who chant offensively. It's also stated that those who chant Hare Krishna offensively, they go to hell. So he rules. It's not a pleasant job, but he does so on behalf of Krishna. And being deputed by Krishna and being empowered by Krishna. So Krishna is on the, just like the ultimate Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra is Krishna. All these names, they're names for Krishna. They're borrowed names. Shiva is known as Shiva, means auspicious. But the really auspicious is Krishna. Indra means king. But the real king is Krishna. So Yama is the regulator, the administrator, the controller. So that function he does on behalf of Krishna, who is the ultimate regulator, administrator, controller. Of course, in the spiritual world, it's more of an anarchical situation. Krishna is the supreme controller there also. But there's no need of elections or rules, because everyone, it's simply cooperates happily. Anarchy is possible if everyone is perfect. And otherwise, it's in this material world, administration is required. Controlling by power is required. Argumentum ad vachalam. That this is the world of forgetting Krishna. Everyone is rebellious against Krishna. So, because people do not happily cooperate, some force, some threat of, and sometimes actual administration of pain to others is required to maintain some law and order within this world. It's the condition of this world that if there is to be any ordered situation by which at least the pious people can improve themselves and develop their consciousness to a higher level, it is required that there is pain inflicted to those who, if it was not inflicted on them, would cause pain to others and disrupt the progress of others up to a higher consciousness and out of this material world. So that is an unfortunate fact of this material world. And that's why talk of love, peace, compassion, and all this kind of thing, although it sounds very nice, it is not very helpful unless there is a complete understanding of the nature of human society and the purpose of life. Just like in the West now, there's in America, and there's a lot of interest in Buddhism, and Buddha is saying to be very nice, and the whole idea is very peaceful, but Srila Prabhupada is much more practical. That yes, we want peace in society, but peace is only possible if it's enforced, which means you have to have people who are not... At least a class of people who are prepared to be not peaceful. The example I often give is in India, where I live most of the time, is that if the government of India was to all of a sudden actually give more respect to Mahatma Gandhi than simply lighting a lamp on his appearance day, Gandhi Jayanti as they call it, they actually were to follow what he said, if they were to announce that from today we are following the principle of non-violence, the army, all the armed forces are disbanded and we're not going to fight. So the amount of time it would take for the Pakistani army to invade would just be the amount of time they could recover from the shock and organize their forces. And in fact, they're attacking all the time. There's constant fighting going on the borders between the rather ill-defined border between India and Pakistan. So it's not a good policy for the government of India to be so idealistic as to declare complete non-violence. The result of doing that would be more violence immediately. So the Vedic injunction, or in Bhagavatam, well, the general term is given there in Bhagavad Gita, ahimsa. That term is given, which more broadly than non-violence, it means an attitude of non-violence. That's a more broad definition, you can say. So the Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev says, Nati Hingsrena, by which means, Nati Hingsa, means not excessive violence. Some violence, in this world, violence is required. Prabhupada is much more practical. And even the Buddhists, they may talk of non-violent, but it's not practical. Just like in Sri Lanka, they just finished a 30-year war. The government, which is the Sinhala people of Sri Lanka, they're Buddhists. And they just finished a civil war with the Tamil people, who are mostly Hindus. Some are Muslims, some are Christians. And some of the Sinhalese people are mostly all Buddhists. But they fought, the Tamil people fought against the Sinhalese people because, anyway, there's political reasons for that. Similarly, in Thailand, there's an ongoing insurgency in the south of Thailand, Muslims. And the government, which is, and the government soldiers who are all Buddhists, they're fighting. So what happened to the non-violence? It's impractical. So to talk of love and peace and compassion, it's all very well, but it's meaningless unless we have a practical program for the whole of society. I mean, one person may be, love, peace, and all, but such people, they also require bodyguards, probably. Once you become a big cheater, guru, then people become envious and they may want to shoot you or whatever. Actually, such people generally, they would be improved by a bullet in the head. They're cheating people, mostly all these people who love. But what do you mean love? Love for Krishna. Just love, love. Maybe one individual, if someone slaps him in the face, he can turn the other cheek. But it's not good to have a national policy like that. Just like Arjuna, he wanted to be forgiving, compassionate, and Krishna told him, you're a damn fool and rascal. You're trained to fight. You have to fight. Don't think yourself more saintly than me, Krishna. He didn't say that, but that was implied. So, for a Kshatriya to fight on the battlefield, that is pious, and for him to not fight is sinful. So, in some cases, violence is pious, and non-violence is impious. Of course, this all has to be understood very carefully, otherwise it will be misused. But the understanding, Yama, he controls, Yamaraja, he controls by force, it's not very nice. But it is required in this world. And Krishna, Lilayatena Bhuvanani Jayatyajasram, Krishna conquers over the whole material world by his lila. But his lila also includes vinashayata dushkritam. It also includes